So the next speaker, Zeno already introduced. He's a chief threat researcher at Intel, and he's going to be giving an overview or a summary of BIOS and secure boot attacks. Take it away, man.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay. So I have formally I have 10 minutes and 60 foils. So at some point I'll just give up and skip to the end. And that's good because all the foils are really a catalog of attacks against the firmware that summarizing some of the research work in that space over last probably 8 years. With the more recent at the top, so you'll get to hear about the more recent one. And I'm presenting on behalf of the my team, Advanced Threat Research at Intel. A lot of the work here is the work of the team. So the blue collar here is not because of Blue Hat, or it's not because of Intel, but because of the legacy BIOS, which apparently in the past liked a lot of blue collar. So now the security of the that blue collar BIOS was that BIOS updates are, or cyan secure BIOS updates are rare. No secure boot, so bootkits exist today and existed for a few years now. I'm not advocating to give up legacy BIOS, you can secure it, but well, I guess I am. But anyway, then the world moved to the UEFI firmware, UEFI compliant firmware with a much better GUI. I had a slide explaining what UEFI is, but I guess I won't be, like Zeno mentioned, insulting your intelligence again with explaining what UEFI is. But the UEFI realized the problem of getting into the bootloaders and try to solve that problem by introducing a secure boot. And the secure boot here is that at the bottom you have firmware, you have platform-specific firmware which complies with the UEFI interfaces, which then loads some core UEFI environment, Dixie environment. The security of that firmware relies in a great part on the secure update, and then that firmware loads and executes different firmware drivers for different devices or service drivers or applications, and finally OS bootloaders. And the OS bootloaders, the chain of those bootloaders, find which operating system to load and load operating system kernel and drivers and so on. So that whole process is basically implementing securely booting of the platform. Now, obviously, we want this whole process to be secure, and in order to understand how to for this process to be secure, it is my main belief that it is most importantly to understand what were the past attacks against that process or attacks that impact the overall BIOS firmware security. And we have broken down them into multiple attack vectors. I'll just go around that flower, and I'll start with some of the past vulnerabilities and past attacks against secure boot. One of the first attacks that was possible against some of the platforms implementing secure boot is through the firmware, and precisely because the firmware did not correctly configure write protections on the spy flash, and so the bottom line of the attack was one bit manipulation on the spy flash, corrupting the platform key. And bypassing secure boot. So this is the hierarchy of the secure boot keys, and at the bottom there is a platform key which is the root certificate that verifies signatures on the key exchange keys, which then certificates that used to verify signatures on the whitelist and blacklist databases containing either certificates or hashes of the EFI binaries. Now, the uh, The attack essentially worked by corrupting this root key stored in non-volatile spy flash. Because the configuration was not protected, it was just possible to corrupt basically the name or GUI of the platform key variable on some of the systems, which then told to the BIOS firmware that this root key, the root certificate, didn't exist at all on the system. And if you don't have a root certificate on the system, you cannot really enforce secure boot. So that is the relatively generic attack, platform vendor independent, and relatively easy to mount and completely bypass a secure boot. So this is how it worked. You had a OS level exploit which programs a spy controller on the platform, modifies the contents on the spy flash, specifically that platform key, and at that point, firmware is not enforcing any of the signature checks of the on the bootloaders or Dixie drivers. Now, the next, we've tried to look at how secure boot is actually being turned on and off on the platforms, and obviously, it has to have some on-off switch. Because you can go to BIOS options, setup options, and you can turn it off and on. But that's physical access. So that's not necessarily something secure boot wants to protect from. But at the same time, this control should be stored somewhere in non-volatile memory. And typically it is stored in the spy flash. So what we've tried to do, we've tried to dump the entire contents of the spy flash when secure boot is off and on, and compare those contents to basically find that switch where it is stored on a specific platform. So if you just compare the two images, then that might be pretty difficult because there's a lot of changes happening even every boot on the non-volatile RAM on the SPI chip. There's a better way. It is possible to use some of the tools that parse and extract the persistent variables from that NVRAM. And specifically, this was done using ChipSec. And you can see that there are a few changes in a few variables between those two events. And one of those variables was setup. And setup variable is where some systems store all of the options that you choose in the BIOS setup screen. It turned out that the control for that disable secure boot is actually in that variable among all other setup options. So you can see that there are just two bits flipped in the setup variable. So at that point there has to be a demo usually, but basically by flipping that bit in the setup variable, because setup variable, as any UEFI variable, runtime UEFI variables, they are accessible at runtime to the applications through the OS API in Windows. That's a set firmware environment variable API. So it is possible to change the contents of that variable from user mode, reboot the machine, and you boot without secure boot. But you can figure this out, or some security agent in the system can figure out that something bad happened because secure boot should be on, but it was turned off. So the way attackers would proceed with bypassing that restriction is finding a vulnerability that bypasses secure boot at the same time indicating that it's on. And one of the vulnerabilities that we have co-discovered with a team from MITRE, with Zeno and other folks, is that some of the systems, they were storing policies, secure boot policies. Specifically, UEFI defines policies, what to do with a certain type of images loaded from certain type of places like firmware volume or removable media or fixed media and so on. And also what to do in case of a signature check fails. So in case signature check failed, so we've attempted to do that on some system, we've modified the bootloader and this is what we got. This is a secure boot in action. What it says is invalid signature detected, check secure boot policy in setup. That was a good hint, because secure boot policy and setup and we know what setup is already. So we've started doing the same thing as we did with the secure boot on off, compared the two secure boot variables. And in fact, you can see, you can look for a specific sequence of a specific bytes, because the policies have predefined values. Like for example, 040404 here means that three policies are defined as query the user upon security violation. And if you find those sequence of bytes, you can guess that those are policies. So by changing those policies, let's say from 4 to 0 at the bottom, you essentially telling the UEFI BIOS that it needs to boot the binary anyway, anyways, even if the signature check failed. So the first byte is the option ROM policy. It was 0 from the beginning, so any Dixie driver as an loaded as an option ROM, it would have been allowed to execute anyways. But fixed media and removable media policies were all query the user, and we flipped them back to to allow execute anyway. So yeah, and this is the source code that was reconstructed by MITRE researchers from that BIOS, and it clearly shows that instead of taking a hard-coded policies, it was actually reading those policies from the UEFI variable named setup. Now the other interesting vulnerability that was affecting some of the systems is, you know, there you might know that the UEFI supports, well, the NVRAM space is precious, so you don't get to store all the PE headers. You don't want to store all the PE headers for the PUCOF executables on the spy flash. So instead of storing PE headers, there's a format called a TERS executable supported by the UEFI, and it has a much smaller header. It's also, it's basically PUCOF image with a different header, which is much smaller, containing only a subset of fields from PE header, and it's suitable to store those images on the flash. So ideally, if the such image, TERS executable T image, is being loaded by the BIOS, and secure boot is on, then the BIOS needs to block the loading that image, because TE images don't really support signatures. There's no space in the header to keep the signatures. So we've attempted to do that, and this is just showing the TE header, which is smaller. We've attempted to do that on some of the systems, and what we've found out is that the code that handles the secure boot checks, it calls the specific function, let's call it get file buffer, to read the image. And the function was checking whether it was a valid PECOF image. And because it was a TE image, it wasn't valid PECOF image. So it was returned an EFI load error. And so the handler, the secure boot handler, when it get the image load error, it returned the EFI success, meaning that hey, you can go on and continue loading the T image. So this way, the attack works just by replacing a bootloader with a bootkit and replacing the header of the bootkit from P to T header, and that that bootkit will get loaded. How much time do I have? I can keep going. Okay, for 2 more hours? Or 3 minutes, yeah. Okay, so I'll finish at least the secure boot once. So the other thing, there's a so-called compatibility support module. So this is a module that allows you to boot, to do a legacy boot, legacy OS boot on top of EFI BIOS, and also boot the legacy option ROMs, which of course are not signed, as well as MBR. So some of the systems that we've observed, they actually had a fallback mode, or a default mode CSM with secure boot on. So basically, the BIOS was checking the signatures, but if signatures failed, it was falling back to the legacy boot. So it was booting from the MBR. Just corrupt the image, replace the MBR, and you got the bootkit, legacy bootkit. So Later, the system started to actually protect from that attack by not allowing you to enable CSM. But they didn't allow you to enable CSM in the BIOS options. But they stored that control, enable, disable, of the CSM in the UEFI variable, which is a notoriously setup variable, which is accessible, as we've seen, accessible at runtime. So you flip that bit, enable CSM, and you're back to a legacy boot. There are other interesting controls that were found in the same variable, specifically the control that tells BIOS on the next reboot to clear all the configuration, secure boot configuration, including all the keys. So as you've seen, if you clear all the keys, including removing, if you remove platform key, the secure boot automatically turns off. The same goes with restoring the old configuration. The default configuration may be secure. It depends on the platform implementation again, but it may be secure. However, it's old, specifically the DB or DBX variables, which is a blacklist of compromised binaries or insecure UEFI binaries, may have hashes in the blacklist, but when you restore to default, those hashes go away. And the final, my favorite attack was the attack is done by just a reboot. So one system that we've observed, we could modify the secure boot configuration, but the system was detecting those changes upon reboot. It was telling you that we detected unauthorized modification of the secure settings, secure configuration. So it beeped three times, showed this obscure message, and then after a couple of seconds, it continued to boot with the modified settings. So we haven't found that attack immediately. It took us actually a couple of weeks to figure out that that was a problem. Like I said, I'm giving up and I'm jumping to through a couple of foils, to the conclusion foils. A lot of those attacks, you may think that they require first kernel exploit. However, it's just a matter of finding a proper vulnerability in the driver or a kernel, or finding a driver which is signed that allows you to access all the hardware resources, like, for example, read-write-everything driver, which essentially moves all of those attacks against firmware and the BIOS into the user space. So now all those attacks can be done by malicious applications. So best practices. Enable hardware protections. Hardware protections are complex. Enable them for the BIOS firmware and SMRAM. Have a recovery mechanism for the BIOS firmware and essential configuration. Minimize UEFI variables attack surface. It is possible to whitelist or blacklist some of the UEFI variables in the OS or in the set variable SMI handler for people who develop surface. Don't store sensitive data in spy flash. Consider all NVRAM contents malicious when handling them in the firmware. So it is possible to think that the contents of NVRAM are protected, therefore we don't need to do any checks when loading those contents. But in fact, modifying that configuration may trigger a buffer flow in the firmware. Validate input to SMI handlers. Assume all input to SMI handlers malicious. And there are lots of input to the SMI handlers. Sign firmware updates, use secure defaults for static or dynamic settings. Sanitize BIOS keys from, BIOS passwords keys from DRAM and synchronize with ADK. Key takeaways, configuring hardware and firmware securely is not trivial, very not trivial. We have a platform security configuration available to the OEMs, IBBs, and Microsoft has access to that. It has multi-pages with a lot of recommendations to how to securely configure the platform. We also have tools like ChipSec framework, or MITRE has Copernicus that can help with that. The hardware security test interface sounds like a good idea. We need to participate in the newly formed UEFI security response team, and also UEFI forum has UEFI security sub-team and platform security sub-team. Our team is offering trainings in platform firmware security to OEMs and IBBs. The next one is in December. So with that, I'm finishing the 60-foil presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Yuri.